With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool.
Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Just Joe?
Yes, Sammy.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
If you wait 3 more seconds, you'll hear me say that.
Want to be prepared.
In the very first line.
Want to be prepared.
Jesus fucking Christ. Keep that in.
I really prep for these a lot, so.
This week on Happy, Sad, Confused, Joe Manganiello on superheroes and Smurfs. I'm Josh Horowitz. I'm neither a Smurf nor a superhero. Joining me, as always, is Sammy on the intro. Hey, Sammy.
I consider myself a super Smurf.
Yeah. That's the Smurf that's missing. There's
Smurfette, Smurf.
There's Hefty, but there's no super Smurf.
Oh, my God. J.J. Abrams, let's do it. Let's make a super Smurf.
J.J., you can pass on that one. Not a good idea, even though she sounded enthusiastic about it. Welcome to the podcast, guys. This week on the show, Mr. Joe Manganiello, as advertised. We love Joe around here.
For so many reasons.
First, he is the next stage in human evolution.
He's a physical specimen.
We admire him and his parents for producing such a specimen.
Yeah.
And he's a big old nerd.
A big secret nerd. Not so secret, I guess.
If you listen to this podcast,
He out-nerds you.
He out-nerds me.
Which is remarkable.
But yes, Joe is awesome. He is starring in the new Smurf movie, Smurfs the Lost Village, opening this Friday. A very sweet film, obviously, for the whole family. Bring him along. And he plays Hefty Smurf. Of course he does. What is he plays Smurfette? No, he's Hefty Smurf.
He's a very good actor, Josh.
He
could play
it. That's
any
true.
Smurf.
That's true. Demi Lovato, for the record, is Smurfette in this one.
For the record.
For the record. I don't want the Smurf contingent coming after me.
Don't stop the presses. It was a joke.
So Joe has been very kind to us over the years. He's done a lot of fun sketches with us. We talk about that. And he's also someone that, as I just said, like he's a big old nerd. He's into Dungeons and Dragons. He's into comic books and into like The Hobbit and Tolkien stuff. And we talk about all that and more in this conversation, this very wide-ranging conversation. You know, he infamously was up for Superman a few years back. He's been up for a number of superhero
roles. Would have been
roles.
Such a good Superman.
Been a good Superman.
I would have loved that.
He's actually up for Spider-Man, too. It's a little bit too big maybe for Spider-Man.
I was going to say, yeah. He doesn't have that, like, normal guy look that you need for Spider-Man.
He inevitably is going to play a superhero because he's kind of like a walking, talking superhero right now. And it's actually also a very frank conversation. And, you know, he brings up a turning point in his life a number of years back when he gave up drinking and sort of got his life in order. So always appreciate Joe coming by and being fun and honest and like I said, just a kindred spirit in the good old nerd topics. So he's always welcome here and thrilled to have him on the podcast this week. Other business to attend to? Well, we should mention that we just got back, Sammy and I.
Yeah.
If you heard the intro last week, we were taping our intros from Las Vegas.
Josh had a big old margarita in his hand the whole time we were recording.
That's not true. It was two. It was one in each hand.
Yeah, sorry.
You had to hold the microphone for me.
Yeah.
No. It was all business.
It really was.
It was a lot of work, but it was fun.
It was very fun.
We were at this thing called CinemaCon, which is this big old convention for the theater owners. They come out and the studios come out and they show like all their wares for the upcoming year, like all their big summer movies and even fall movies. And they tried out a ton of movie stars. We sat through a bunch of presentations. Mm-hmm. You and I, we watched the new Pirates movie.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the Fox presentation, which brought Sammy to tears. She was sitting next to me. She's bawling like a child.
I was trying to put my hair in front of my eyes so he wouldn't see. Well, the reason I cried was because Hugh Jackman came out of nowhere and showed footage from The Greatest Showman, which was incredible.
It was like a Make-A-Wish Foundation for
Sammy.
It was kind of amazing because we're sitting in these seats, this beautiful, it's called the Coliseum, beautiful theater, and we notice at the outset that there are like balloons, or Sammy notices,
mm-hmm.
there are balloons up top that are waiting to be
dropped.
Can't
get past me.
So Sammy notices that. We're like, okay, something is up. And then like, as the presentation kept going, it kind of slowly dawned on me. I'm like thinking about their upcoming films, and I remember like, whispering to you, like, I think Hugh might might come. And you were like, you think? Yeah. And then like as it went on and on and on, I was like,
it's happening. It's happening.
Hugh's definitely coming, Sammy.
And then
sure enough.
Oh, he comes out. He gives like a 10-minute long speech full of anecdotes.
And by the way, so we were positioned, and then you noticed this, that there was a teleprompter we could read, which was fascinating to see like what everyone was supposed to say. And Hugh diverged off the teleprompter like every other sentence with an
anecdote.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it's like your uncle giving a speech at a wedding.
Except
it's like,
they're
come
wonderful,
on.
Coherent stories.
I mean, except it was – when it ended, I was devastated.
So, yes, and The Greatest Showman, for those that don't know, and why would you? Because we're months away from it, except for Sammy. Sammy knows everything.
I could tell you about it.
This is a big old musical about P.T. Barnum that Hugh Jackman has been developing for a number of years, and they finally shot it. And it's him and Zac Efron and Zendaya and Rebecca Ferguson, who was just on the podcast, Michelle Williams, mm-hmm. and they showed exclusively the first trailer. It's not out there yet. I'm sure they're going to reveal it soon, but it looked great. It looked really good. Yeah.
I was so excited.
It's the same guys that brought you the music for Dear Evan Hansen and La La Land, so you know we're
in
good hands. Yes,
we're gonna be okay,
guys. It's gonna be okay. Just wait till the fall.
I can't.
So yeah, we saw a lot of cool stuff, mm-hmm. and we did a lot of fun interviews. And you can check out.
Lost some money. We all lost some money.
Yeah, we lost some money. Lost some money.
Did
some,
that's Vegas, though, right?
Did some gambling. Did some gambling with Ansel Elgort.
Yeah.
You know how I roll.
your bad luck charm, Ansel Elgort.
I did. We had a fun little run-in the last night with Ansel at the blackjack mm-hmm. table. It was fun mm-hmm. to catch up with him.
I also saw Brenton Thwaites.
Oh, Brenton Thwaites.
It's
a fun name to say.
Yeah, Brenton Thwaites. So saw him doing some gambling.
Nice. The charming mm-hmm. young star of Pirates. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot of our interviews are up on the MTV Facebook page. If you go through the videos part of that, or if you go to MTV's YouTube page, you'll see a bunch of interviews with Charlize. We chatted with. I love the Charlize. Talked to Denis Villeneuve, the director of Blade Runner. What else
you
is
got,
up there?
Accosted by Wahlberg again.
Yeah, that we didn't put that video up. We really should because it's just remarkable.
I would like everyone to know my favorite thing from CinemaCon mm-hmm. was after a Wahlberg interview. Josh and Wahlberg are very close, very like brothers. And
he, in fact, at one point said, I'm the younger brother he never had.
Yeah, and you literally cringed. And he's walking away, and off camera goes, all right, love you, buddy, see ya. And Josh goes, thanks.
Leave him wanting more.
Oh, my God.
Don't reciprocate.
He's going to hurt you.
No. Well, yes, he will. But that's part of the dynamic.
Mark, I love you. If Josh doesn't,
no, he doesn't
I do.
Want that. He doesn't want that.
All right.
He wants to be rejected. That's
how
it works.
I'm learning a lot.
So, yes, check out our CinemaCon conversations. We had a blast there, but also I think I speak for both of us when I say we're happy to be back.
Oh, my God, so happy.
A lot of fun stuff along the way. We're going to be covering the Fate of the Furious premiere soon, mm-hmm. so look for coverage from that. Mm-hmm. And
My first Fast and the Furious movie.
Wow, Sammy was reluctant to admit that. But yes, we're actually, after this introduction, we're going to go off and watch the movie. And this is going to be Sammy's first Fast and the Furious movie.
Where
have you been the last decade?
All I know is that one of The Rock's dogs is named after his character. So I feel like I'm good.
Dwayne is not really the lead. I mean, kind of, he's not the lead.
Well, then I'm not going.
Oh, my God. Every minute on screen he's not on, you're like, where's DJ?
Oh, this is bullshit.
I will be fascinated to hear Sammy's review of the eighth. Nothing like jumping into a franchise on the eighth one.
Yeah, I'm going to get a good handle on it.
So, yes, we'll report back next week on our thoughts on Fate of the Furious. But, yeah, let's get to the main event on this week's show.
Joe Manganiello.
No, don't. That's not it. We talk about that. Guys, it's Joe Manganiello. It's not that hard a name to pronounce.
Oh, it's nice.
I mean, Manganiello is a fun name, but that's wrong.
No, it's okay.
Joe Manganiello, pay him some respect and and enjoyed this conversation with one of my favorites. He's a good guy and a great actor. And he gives good hefty Smurf this week in Smurfs at the Lost Village. Check it out this Friday. And for now, enjoy this conversation with Joe Manganiello. Don't butcher the name, Sammy. I see what you're going to do. Don't do it. It's been, as I said when we first saw each other a moment ago, it's been far too long, my friend.
It has been far too long. You were the author of some of the funniest sketches I've ever done.
You are my muse.
Heavy is the head. Yeah, Joe Manganiello's guide to pronouncing fucked up celebrity names.
Yeah, I see you tweeted about it relatively recently as you still use it as a reference point
because,
for people.
God damn it, people still can't pronounce my goddamn last name.
It's not Mangello, guys. How hard is it? Come on.
No. Which they would learn if they watched the video. So I'm actually, you know what? I'm going to put it back out again.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
We have to recirculate that every once in a while.
Yeah.
I will say, because I remember, I think the first time we met was on one of these sketches that we did. It was for, we did a little thing called Actors Anonymous.
That's right.
Remember that one?
Yes.
And it was like a little self-help group when you were in your True Blood years, and it was actors that played vampires. And here's what I remember.
And werewolves also.
And werewolves, yes, thank you. Sorry. Obviously. Werewolves, obviously. Yeah. And what I remember is I hadn't met you, and I remember like my first encounter with you was like, I was looking for you, and they were like, oh, Joe's out there like prepping. Like he's memorizing it. He's like reading his lines. He's like getting into it. I was like, okay, he's already far surpassed the preparation on 90% of the people that have done sketches with me in the past. So I know I like this man.
Oh, yeah, but it was great. I mean, you're a great writer. It was hilarious. Yes. And I think with comedy, you want to be ready. You don't want to mess around with that. So yeah. No, I wasn't messing around. I wasn't messing around.
No, you never
on
do.
Actors Anonymous.
You don't do half-ass, man.
Yeah.
He goes all the way. He's in full Smurfs makeup right now as Hefty, guys.
With a little white hat on and white pants.
But it suits. Somehow you make it work.
I had a tail surgically implanted for this interview.
You almost look more Avatar-ish than Smurfish right now, to be honest.
Me?
Yeah.
With my Smurf costume on.
Yeah, well, because you're a larger man and...
I'm big boned, goddammit.
Is that what they called you in school? Your parents told you?
You're big boned.
Just big boned.
Yeah, no, I was like a scrawny toothpick.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Were you, okay, well, give me the stages of physical evolution of Joe
the
Manganiello.
Jurassic era.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At 6 years old, at 10 years old, at 15 years old.
Well, I was tall and skinny.
Okay.
I was skinny, you know, but I was super tall, like head and shoulders taller than all the other kids at the Easter egg hunts. And, but you know, I was good at sports, but I was thin. I had giant Coke bottle glasses. My vision is awful. Big ears have stuck out.
Now, is this one of those things that like you say in retrospect, but if like I actually did my research and I found people around you, you'd be like, oh no, he was a stud at 10 years old.
No,
this is real.
No. When I released my book 3 years ago, the first page of the book is like me then.
Right.
And it's a picture of me looking exactly the way I just described myself, like to the T.
And I mean, and from our conversations in the past, like you, it's like you're like you've got the soul of Josh Horowitz in like He-Man's body, basically.
Like a Jaeger.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, of course he makes a Pacific Rim reference, like to make it work.
but I think that was probably the idea as a kid. Yeah. I grew up reading comic books.
Yeah,
and I read comic books, science fiction, every monster movie I could consume. And so when I opened the pages of those books, all of those superheroes, supervillains, they were jacked. I mean, it was the 80s, right. So everybody was ripped. And I think, I won't even say subconsciously, I'm not even going to desecrate, you know, I'm not even going to put it down that way. I would say that consciously, I think it was an effort that the first time I get to break out of this, I'm going for it. I'm never going to look back. God damn it! I think that's probably how bodybuilding became a really or something. I struggled at it for years. I just could not put on the kind of weight that I wanted to look like those characters. It just wasn't happening, and it took a long time.
Well, so when did you hit your stride in terms of like putting it together and kind of like
somewhere towards the end of high school, I think I got contact lenses, or I was allowed to get contact lenses.
Clark Kent turns into Superman.
Well, my glasses were like fish bowls.
Right.
Like my prescription is awful. It's like a -8 in both eyes.
Yeah, you're staring the exact wrong direction right now. I'm to your left, Joe.
Yeah, I'm like that high school shop teacher who's like screaming at you, but his cross eyes looking the other direction.
Totally.
Yeah.
So the contacts came in.
So the contacts came in, and I don't know. I got a new haircut. And
it's like, what did Joe do over the summer, guys?
Yeah, all those bicep curls started paying off.
Nice.
Yeah, so, but there was a miraculous turnaround.
Okay,
but the girls at my high school, like, still saw me.
Right, they knew the before, so they weren't ready to
appreciate the after.
It was shallow
how. They still the opposite. They still saw me that way. But the girls at other – so I had to go to, like, the other schools, the other high schools.
To reinvent yourself. Like, no, that old guy never existed.
They had no idea. So I got to just start over.
So – okay. So we – We're virtually the same age. 76 is our birth year.
Yeah.
So we have
the bicentennial.
There you go. We came in to celebrate. So give me some reference points. Okay. So let's talk movies. Let's talk TV. Let's talk comics. Let's talk cartoons. Okay. Let's get into it.
Okay.
What was on your wall? What were the first obsessions?
Well, as a kid at 8 years old, I taught myself to read. Like I would memorize when I was little. I would memorize the books that my mom read to me, because if I remember correctly, I had like a little, you know, one of those little tiny records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the little tiny record player, kid record player, and I had The Hobbit.
Yep.
And it was the one where, you know, when you hear ding ding, turn the page, right? So I had the one of The Hobbit, and I thought, man, this is like a real book with no pictures. Like right. I'm gonna have to train. To read this as a young kid.
Mom, I got to go into training.
Yeah, Mom.
No pictures here.
Just leave the food. Slip it under the door.
Give me a week.
Yeah. And when I was 8 years old, I finally picked up The Hobbit and started reading The Hobbit, which is funny because I remember a kid who couldn't read. Like at that age, yeah. He was behind. He would call me every night and I would.
You're telling him the story of The Hobbit?
Telling him what I read that day. It was interesting.
There's this guy named Bilbo.
Yes. Little guy and there's a sword called Sting. I think The Hobbit was probably that first kind of benchmark of this is like the height of monster fiction.
Yeah.
And then from there it led me to Stephen King, like all things Stephen King, whether that was Cujo, Pet Sematary, you know, what was it, Eyes of the Dragon.
Right, right, right.
Dark Tower. And then I got into comic books like heavily.
So wait, let's stop for a second. What do you think about the Dark Tower film that we're finally going to see? Are you anxious? This is his seminal work. This is like they've been trying to develop this for years.
I'm curious because it's also a complicated piece of work. And
yeah,
it's also,
I confess, I haven't read it. I mean, I know enough about it, but it seems weighty to like do in one. It clearly would be a series, hopefully, et cetera. But
well, it's one of those challenges I think for adaptation in the way that like if you ever read the book Fight Club,
yeah.
Fight Club reads like a schizophrenic wrote it. It's insane.
Right.
So then to take that, it's such a creative challenge to then figure out how to theatrically present that material.
Sure.
And I'm curious to see how they do that with Dark Tower because it's very odd.
Yeah.
It's an odd, and it doesn't really explain anything to the audience, explain itself
perfect
to the audience.
Perfect for movie going audiences in 2017.
But I think people need that now.
Seriously.
They really need that.
It all doesn't need to be explained.
Enough
guys.
With the spoon fed. Shit, you know?
I'm hopeful. I was more hopeful when it was going to be Cary Fukunaga who was going to do it. Did you hear about that?
He
was going to direct it.
Yeah.
I forget the director they have now. I think it's the guy that did Mama, which I think was a decent movie as mm-hmm. well. But I like that they're splitting it. The first film is just them as kids, mm-hmm. and then hopefully they're going to return to it in the second half. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
But do you remember that miniseries? Well, that hit us. Like, that hit me. Again, we're virtually the same age. I remember Tim Curry, like, vividly haunting my dreams.
Oh,
like
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was that TV miniseries was phenomenal.
Amazing.
Like, fantastic.
Yeah.
Maybe the best Stephen King up to this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. You could say Shawshank.
Shawshank, where do you come down on Shining? I know Stephen hates it, but I know it's not faithful to the book, but I mean, come on.
No, but it's an amazing work. I mean,
Kubrick's pretty good.
Yes. Yeah, he's all right. He's okay.
Okay, so then comics came around when?
Comics.
And were you DC Marvel? What were you?
I was pretty much Marvel and independent. Almost
Dark Horse and like that kind of stuff?
Independent, like old, original, black and white Ninja Turtles.
Okay, right.
Like original Eastman and Laird,
yeah.
The first 11. I caught, there were this group of kids in Maine that I knew growing up on this island in Maine. And I'd heard rumblings about these Ninja Turtles and they had the comics.
Just word on the street about the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, like in the comic community, in the nerd community. I had heard rumblings and they had them. And I thought, I looked at them and went, man, this is the real deal. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen, and which was really neat because it was such a metaphor for being teenage, and it was they were the X-Men in a way.
Totally,
they were, but it was also very Japanese in another way in that you have these abominations who have no place in life or in the world, but they were trained from birth by this master, this rat, to get revenge for him. And in the first issue of the comic book, they get revenge. Their entire life's mission, their life's goal their purpose in life is over.
Now what?
Now what? And that's the story. Yeah. And that's what was so interesting, was that it was these creatures that didn't belong in our world trying to figure out what to do with the rest of their lives. And that, to me, was fascinating.
So when the homogenized cartoon came on, were you like, come on, guys, this is stupid?
I was angry. I was, because it betrayed what right. I loved, or the humanity
yeah.
that I was interested in exploring. And, you know, but I'm happy that those guys made money, because I think that for any independent comic maker to then blow up their franchise that way, like totally. As an adult, I'm like, you go.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so happy for you guys. But I miss those stories.
Yeah.
I miss that exploration. I thought that was like a fascinating,
it's an amalgamation of different things, as you say, and kind of like yeah. so audacious, and kind of like that. The title alone was like a deal breaker for so many, for any yeah. adult. It was like, yeah, fuck that. I'm not going to yeah. even look at that. But
right.
if you actually cracked it open.
Brilliant.
Right.
Yeah, those early issues were brilliant. So I was into those. I was also into this comic book called Martial Law.
I don't remember that one.
It was Pat Mills, this Brit, wrote this comic, and there was a particular series called Fear and Loathing that I thought was really, nice. Really brilliant. I was into the Frank Miller Wolverine.
Yeah.
I had a Frank Miller Wolverine poster on my wall.
Nice.
I was into – what else was I into as a kid? X-Men. I was like huge, like everything X-Men, X-Force, New Mutants. All of it.
It boggles my mind. I've talked about this with other people. I mean, I don't know if you read like Wizard magazine when we were kids, and they mm-hmm. did like the fan casting.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember it was like the dream casting, and Patrick Stewart was on that list. Like
of
who
course.
Would be like? Of course,
yeah.
he was the guy. And like we've just like so like gone beyond our wildest dreams of like what all that was going to turn into. Where like,
sure.
I mean, sure, there's a lot of shit out there, and there are a lot of shitty adaptations, but there's like the quality of filmmakers that are attracted to this material based
sure.
on both passion and just the marketplace.
James Mangold is amazing. I got to meet James Mangold. I was
awesome.
I screen tested for him repeatedly. We had like several screen tests for this project that never got up on its feet. But I got to meet him and hang out with him. And he's a really, really deep guy.
Super smart.
Really
guy.
Smart storyteller. And yeah, you talk about like how far that universe has expanded. I mean, we had a really, really great version of Caliban.
Right.
You know, like,
we also had a semi-not great version like a year before of Caliban. So we had two in a year.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's amazing. I mean, we have the technology now to do these films right, but what I love about it is that every once in a while we get one that has a great story.
Yeah. Well, Mangold, he's the real deal. I mean, Copland blew my mind when I first saw that one.
The Johnny Cash movie.
Yeah, 310 to Yuma. I mean, he's
yeah.
a real filmmaker.
Yeah.
And I love what he said. I've interviewed him about Logan, which I loved. And like just, he's right. We've kind of reached a tipping point where like, you know, you can only save the world so many times. And that's fun. I like the Avengers movie as much as
right.
the next guy. But like now comes kind of the fun part, I think, where like filmmakers have the opportunity, and we now know that the audience is willing to go there thanks to things like Deadpool and Logan.
Yes.
So I think
right.
I actually think, as opposed to maybe like this trend ending, we might be entering actually even another interesting iteration of the comic book.
Yeah. Well, there's something. Well, which is also it's kind of a return to the whole point of comic books and mythology. It's a modern telling of mythology. The Greek gods were very human. For a reason, because
right.
they were used to talk about human topics
yeah.
without having to get really down and dirty,
right?
You know, and I think we can go further about talking about topics, which is one of the things that I love so much about the first few seasons of True Blood.
Yeah,
we were talking about weighty subjects.
It gave you license to go real.
We're
going to
talk about marriage equality.
Yeah,
ha ha ha. You know, we're going to talk about racism in the South.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha. But it's vampires and werewolves. So it's a little more palatable, I think, in a way.
Yeah.
And that's what I think superheroes should be. But all too often, I think that there's such an onus put on the spectacle of it, because we need to get butts in seats.
Yeah.
And we need to give people something they've never seen before. But I really do think that if you present a great story, people will go. And it's not to say that Logan didn't have spectacle.
Sure.
It's just, you know, Logan is like a White Stripes song that you can hear Jack White's fingernails hit the guitar strings. It
totally.
Was dirty. It was stripped down. And I think that there's a real need for that now.
There's more Happy, Sad, Confused coming up after this break.
With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool.
Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Do you have an all-time favorite? Again, it could be going back to childhood for a superhero film that you love the most.
Oh, boy. Gosh. I mean, I love those Tim Burton Batman movies.
Yeah. I skipped school for June 23rd, 1989. I went to Batman opening day.
I love those, but and I love The Crow, but I think The Dark Knight has to. Yeah. It really is the pinnacle of spectacle with substance.
Yeah.
Talking about a topic and just phenomenal acting, directing. And it's that movie is mind blowing.
I don't know if you've seen this social media trend lately. It's kind of a fun just exercise for film nerds like ourselves, to name your favorite movie of every year you've been alive.
Really?
Yeah. It's been trending like the last year, last week
but
or two.
But it's like that means I'd have to choose between Back to the Future and Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
How could I do that?
Which I saw on the same day. I came back from summer camp. I saw the double feature. I mean, come on. That was a time to be alive.
Oh, God.
I love it. Hell of a Michael J. Fox summer.
Man. Both of those movies. Just perfect, perfect movies.
You know the third movie I saw that day? Real Genius was also that song.
Perfect movie.
Come on.
I love Real Genius.
I'm obsessed with Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer is one of like...
Me too. I mean, he was... When his first string, like his string, probably up and through The Doors and then Tombstone.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
Okay, so we're starting to talk about films. So films when you were... When you were growing up, what were the first film obsessions, actors, films, posters on your wall?
Oh, boy. As a kid, it was Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. And it was – I loved The Empire. I was all about Darth Vader.
The cool guys dress in black always.
Yeah. It just – the power, the command. And you've got to give credit to David Prowse.
Mm-hmm.
Because several other people have put that suit on.
You're totally right.
And it doesn't look right.
It really doesn't.
It doesn't. They don't walk. There's not enough weight. There's not enough gravity. There's not enough earth to the way that they move.
Yeah, I loved Rogue One, but it felt off when he walked on the screen. I'm like, yeah,
and
totally.
No, I'm sorry. I don't, you know, I'm sure I'm going to get a hate letter.
No, but somebody's, you know, someone has to speak truth to power.
But there is, people don't understand that movement is a huge part of acting.
Yeah.
In theater and drama school, there is a huge... you know, importance put on movement, and you have, I mean, Chewbacca moves, right?
Yeah, totally.
But Vader doesn't. And so if anyone's listening out there,
you're ready? You want to?
Yeah. You can use James Earl Jones's voice. I don't care. Like, fine. Just put me in the suit. Like, I'll do it right. Okay, but I'm not 7'1", so I don't know. I'm going to need an Apple box.
You might have one more growth spurt in you.
It's the only time I'll ever stand on an Apple box. No, but so I just think that David Prowse's movement performance.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I went back recently and put it on mute, the original New Hope and Empire. It was like a marathon, and I would put it on mute and on the Vader scenes and just watch the way that he walked and moved and crossed his arms, and it's just
– It's perfect.
It's amazing.
It's perfection.
It's amazing. He's so good in that suit.
So it must have blown your mind when you – you start to get involved in the business, and was literally the first film Spider-Man?
Yes.
That's crazy.
The first professional film, yeah.
So, I mean, not just Spider-Man, Sam Raimi doing Spider-Man, and I'm guessing you were a Sam Raimi fan.
Sure, Evil Dead.
Darkman, all of it.
Darkman, yeah.
Come on.
All of it.
So did you go up for Flash? Did I read that you also went up for Peter?
Well, yeah, I got brought in for Peter Parker, and I'm 6'5". So no matter how much weight I'm going to lose for this, you know, this role, like I'm not going to fit. I'm not right for this character. But I came in and I prepared and I did my Peter Parker audition for Francine Maisler. And she said, you know, that was great, but you're really not right for this part. And I said, I know. And she said, but there is this other character that you're right for. And I said, oh, Flash. And she said, yeah. And I said, oh, okay, great. Yeah, I took a look at those sides. And she goes, okay, do you want to read it with me? And she went to go get me the sides. I said, no, I'm already off book. I got it. She's like, okay. And I had...
See, it's Actors Anonymous all over again. Always prepared.
Always prepared. And I had another shirt on underneath because I wore like a button down and glasses for Peter. And then I took the shirt off and the glasses off and I had like a, you know, T-shirt or whatever, tank top or something. And I read the flash part and she said, okay, I want you to meet Sam Raimi. I said, okay. And she got me this job a couple of days later screen testing all of the Spider-Man candidates. And... I played Flash
Amazing.
In a scene where I had to bully actor after actor. And the first one was James Franco. He had like the day off or the morning off from James Dean. He was filming James
Sure.
Dean.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he and I screen tested together. Scott Speedman and I screen tested together. And then there was another guy who I don't recognize and haven't really seen around since. But there were three of them that
No Heath Ledger. Was he also in the mix at that point?
I don't know, but he wasn't there that day. So those are the three finalists of that day. And then I think Toby self-taped.
Got it.
And somehow got himself in and screen tested separately.
Who was your favorite of the three that you saw? You were casting.
Jeez. I mean, you know, you could tell that there was something about James Franco immediately.
Yeah.
He was very much in James Dean mode,
mm-hmm.
though. So, I mean, he had the hair and everything. So it was a bit, you know, this guy's a little too
cool for school.
Cool for Peter.
Yeah, exactly.
but he wound up Harry. Obviously, the producers and Sam
were impressed.
Felt the same way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he and I both initially read for Peter and wound up the other two guys.
Crazy.
In the movie.
So, okay, so what do you – just give me a sense of, like, being on that first major film set in this, you know, world that you probably never imagined you'd get to this quickly, being directed by Raimi. Mm-hmm. Did it live up to what the hype was? And give me a sense of sort of coming out of it. What were your hopes coming out of it?
Well, it was massive. That was, at the time, the biggest movie ever attempted. It was massive.
Yeah.
And – I remember in my screen test, Sam Raimi looking at my resume, then looking up at me, then looking back down at my resume, then looking back up at me and saying, but you have done theater, right? Because I'm fresh out of drama school and I have no credits that, you know, mean anything to anybody other than these theater credits. And he was trying to search for something in my eyes that could – that would make him trust, you know, in casting me. And he did. And, you know, and I just went in there and did my best and worked as hard as I could. But there was one point during the fight scene where it was the one where I'm fighting Peter after I got food dumped on me in the cafeteria and we're out in the hallway fighting. And he switched over to 20 frames per second. And I heard that one. Okay, whatever. That's for the camera guys. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. So we did one take during, you know, I'm fighting and kind of dancing around and boxing or whatever. And Sam goes, cut. And he comes walking over to me. He puts his hand on my shoulder and says, son, do you want to continue working in motion pictures? And I just went, yes. He said, come with me. Let's go look at the monitors. I went, all right. And he showed me the monitors and said, when I switch frame rate, what that means is that the film is moving quicker, which means that you have to slow your movements down because you're jumping around, you're disappearing and reappearing. So just smooth it out, slow it down. I went, okay. And then I went back. So, you know, I really didn't know anything about the technical aspects of filming. I just, you know, I knew how to act and was trying to apply that. But it was a crash course. I'm there with John Dykstra, who did all the effects for Star Wars. He was telling me stories about building the ping pong tables that became the Death Star and how he likes puppet Jabba better than CGI Jabba. We had that conversation. I'm like, I don't want to offend you, but like, what do you think? And I'm there with those guys working on a green screen, and it was just
insane.
Man, it was amazing.
So was it before or after that? One thing I've noticed that we've never talked about, is it true that you worked for Tyrese for a bit as his
body man?
What were you?
So I met Sam, screen tested, but the movie wasn't going to start shooting for a while, and I had to go make money. So I was screen testing for all these things at the time. Like screen tested for Spider-Man, then like – I got brought in to screen test for Antoine Fuqua for Training Day. Mm-hmm. I screen tested for Gregory Hoblit for this movie called Hearts War that at the time was Harrison Ford, Edward Norton.
Right.
And then I had screen tested twice for the third lead. And then those actors dropped out and it all got reshuffled. and I fell out of the mix, which killed me because that was my dream. Han Solo and the dude from Fight Club, you know?
Hollywood.
Yeah. And then I screen tested for Black Hawk Down. And I was actually in the middle of like that process when Spider-Man came back around. But that was months later. So in the meantime, I had to go make a living, you know, pay my rent, doing what I had always done or through college, which was bounce. So I was a club bouncer. And so I got a job working for the security company, and probably I think my first job with them was bodyguarding this like singer guy, R&B singer. I don't know who he was up in San Francisco, and it was Tyrese.
He's a madman. He's kind of a unique individual.
He's a very unique individual. I'll say that.
I feel like this could be your next book. Is just whatever time you spend around Tyrese.
It's definitely a chapter,
right?
For sure. I was up there bodyguarding for him, and that was like my first job in Hollywood.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the wake of Spider-Man and like between True Blood, how would you characterize those years? I mean, it sounds like you're screen testing for like, you know, A-list material, decent sized parts. For whatever reason, they're not happening. You're doing some TV work in the interim. Are you making a living? Like, is this a time of frustration, excitement, or what?
So I shot Spider-Man about 6 months later. 6 months after I first met Sam Raimi and screen tested, we shot Spider-Man. And that took about 6 months total to film. It was just like here and there, you know, these dates all over the course of 6 months. And then I shot this pilot with Tiffany Amber Thiessen. And then I didn't work again for 3 or 4 years.
Oh, my God.
4 years, which was – there's a reason why. I was always a huge drinker, big time, big. I wanted to be Gary Oldman, which is funny because it's Gary Oldman's birthday today.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I mean,
crazy.
Maybe the finest living actor. We'll put next to Val Kilmer. We'll put him up
there. Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, for sure. Love Gary, I was in drama school, that was the guy. I want to be that guy.
And he was notorious. He went hard. He was in his day.
Yeah, and there's an idea that, you know, I think as a young actor, I think I went looking for trouble because I thought that meant that was going to lead to some form of depth.
Right.
And, you know, if my life is chaos, then,
right,
you know, my work would be chaos. And therefore, you know, and what I found was, no, like my life is chaos and I can't keep it together. And I needed to stop drinking.
Yeah.
And I'm not a person I personally am not a person who's supposed to be drinking ever. And that needed to go. And what happened out of that was that I was never showing up to work drunk. I was never showing up, you know, none of that. I had so much respect for the work. It's just that, you know, my personal life had become such a mess that I wasn't able to prepare and I wasn't able to show up at 100% the way that I always had and wanted to. I wasn't at my best. And I needed to go take care of that. And I also didn't know if I wanted to be an actor anymore. There was an idea inside of me that maybe I did this for egotistical reasons, not the right, you know, real. And so I wound up at the end of like this 3 or 4 year period where I didn't work as an actor. I wound up on the back of a construction truck working for a masonry company doing deliveries and demolitions, which is like, you know, jackhammering and shoveling sand and gravel from 7 to 4 every day with a bunch of guys who don't speak English.
Is this still in L.A.?
This was in L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was in this one of my favorite books in college was like the Fountainhead. So in that, the lead character wins and goes off and works in a rock quarry when things don't go right. And so there was something in my mind of like, this is me at the rock quarry. I'm just working it out until I figure out where to go next. And off of that truck, I wound up. Somebody called me up and they wanted me for this pilot, and that happened. And I then got off that truck because I figured, okay, well, it became so loud, the voice to come back to acting, that it was too loud to ignore anymore. And so I just started walking back into acting.
And how did you sort out the kind of the rationale that you were forwarding with that it might have been for egotistical reasons, which, I mean, again, a percentage of that is fine. We're all doing various things for egotistical reasons.
Sure.
I mean,
Yeah, and I think coming to grips with the fact that yes, that is somewhat the truth. I think what I learned was that I was hoping that if I achieved some level of success or acquired some trappings, that would somehow make me feel better. Yes. In a way that I had never been able to feel. And when I found that it didn't fix me in that way, or the fix was very temporary, I think that's what I had to come to grips with.
Yeah.
And I, you know, had to realize that there's always a next thing. There's always something else, and that's okay. And it's never going to fix the way I feel, but it's going to be this exploration of how I feel.
You're listening to Happy, Sad, Confused. We'll be right back after this. And how do you, because I mean, that's the constant dilemma for you and your industry, I would think, to this day. You're surrounded by people that are so result-oriented, what's next-oriented, like, you know, getting the next big thing. And,
sure.
And you know, you're ambitious, clearly. I feel, you know, I have very similar feelings of wanting to, you know, push myself in different areas. But you're right. Like, you can't – there's so much out of your control. Mm-hmm. It's hard to kind of, like, judge yourself on that stuff. But at the same time, it's easier said than done. So how do you kind of quiet the guy in your brain that's going to make you miserable?
Well, it's funny, you know, I tell young actors, I'm like, man, if you're going to enter this business, like, it's going to break you down and it's going to make you crazy, and you either need to do a ton of drugs or no drugs at all, like, to deal with it.
I recommend the latter.
And that was really, I think, and furthermore, I think I really came to grips with the fact that this job that I do is a spiritual job. Like, it's very spiritual. It's I feel a certain way, and I'm going to make an audience feel that way, whether that's laughter or crying or some sort of, you know, remorse or regret or catharsis, whatever it is. And in order to do that, I really need to be aware. I need to be on top of my game.
Right.
And so the pursuit of things in my personal life that would sort of bolster that or strengthen that, i.e., you know, meditation and all that kind of hippie shit I got into.
Hey, you spent enough time in L.A. It's inevitable.
Yeah. Well, they used to make us do guided meditation and yoga every morning.
Oh, really?
At drama school.
Huh.
So they were very much there was a teacher, in fact, that I really, really was probably my favorite acting teacher there, who taught acting through the chakras and breathing techniques and opening up these portals of energy and things like that.
Does Arnold Schwarzenegger do the same thing? Is he into the portals of energy?
No. Well, this is fucking chakra thing. This is bullshit. You just get up there and you grab your machine gun and you point it in the right direction and you pull the trigger. I mean, what the fuck?
It's pretty damn good.
Thanks. No, probably. I mean, actually, he does TM. He does transcendental meditation.
Really?
Yeah, long time guy.
Okay, so how much does it blow your mind that you're friends with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Like, legit friends, you can call him up. I'm, you know, it's insane.
It's insane. It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, he just put out that video today about.
Oh, I didn't see.
Well, he put out a video because the after school programs are now being cut.
Yeah.
Which his charity of choice is the After School All Stars,
right.
Which I've actually done some work with, and so he's. Yeah, he's on a warpath right now.
I'm sure.
But I see those videos and I think, man, you know, that's my friend. Yay!
Like, yeah, good friend to have.
That's my buddy.
So in the I know we met during the True Blood years, and the Superman story's been told to death. But I'm curious, like, what was there an angry phone call when you found out that you True Blood, for whatever reason, and it's not whatever reason, like, it was legitimately they couldn't let you out, they needed you, but they said, sorry, we can't even let you test for this, we can't even let you meet with Zach.
I met with Zach.
You did meet with Zach.
I had an hour and a half long meeting with Zach, which is what was causing all the trouble.
I went ahead
and met with casting, and then they brought me over to Zach. I met with all the producers. I met with John Jashny and Thomas Tull at Legendary.
Like, oh, so you had real stuff going.
I met everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody involved. And then finally sat down with Zach for an hour and a half and had a big conversation about the character and where it was going and et cetera. And then they called the True Blood costume shop for my measurements to build my suit. And that's what caused that's when it stopped. That was put to an end.
And how was How was Joe then when you were in that? Did you like have some talk with Alan and HBO and everybody and try and?
I mean, my to be done? My agent Kevin Uvain said, "I'm not sure if I can get this done or if I can work this out. But if I can't do it, no one can."
Sure.
Which is true.
<I'm sure>.
So he went to work to Time Warner, who owns Warner Brothers Studios and HBO. They're the umbrella over the top of them. So he right. thought, well, okay.
At
well,
least we've got that in our favor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was just nothing that could be done. Yeah. And at that point, you lay in bed for a week and stare at the ceiling. And you then have to get into a place of gratitude for this job. My day job, which did the show, which was the reason why I was noticed in the first place. Right. Zach and his wife watched True Blood, and I guess when I walked out, he said, that guy'd be a great Superman. This was, you know, a year before I wound up in his office. So you have to be grateful for that. It was also, the first steady paycheck I'd had in a long time. It was a great job. It was the hottest show in the world at that time.
Yeah.
So
you have to put it in perspective, yeah.
You put it in perspective, and you get back in there like, you know, a good soldier, and you go back to work, and you don't let it affect you,
which
is tough sometimes.
Did you take a little time before seeing Man of Steel? Was it tough for you eventually to see it?
You know, I wouldn't see it. I couldn't. I just couldn't. I was really, I'm a sensitive guy, and I was kind of rocked by the whole thing, and I had bicep surgery after Magic Mike 2, and I was up in the middle of the night. Because I, you know, with the pain, and I was on painkillers, and it was on. And so I watched it then.
It's probably for the best.
It's like, all right, I think I'm ready. All right, let's go.
we should talk about and give some love to Smurfs, which I saw. It's actually a very sweet, adorable
movie.
It's
so cute,
it's
right?
really cute.
Yeah, kids will love it.
And the kids will love it. I know what you've got to a niece or nephew that,
yep.
That I'm sure will appreciate it. I've got some nieces and nephews I know will be very much enjoying this. And it's fun to see Smurfs. Like, again, we grew up with
this. We grew up with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they made a couple of movies that weren't – they were like Gremlins.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And this is a return to the cute little
yeah.
Smurfs that we grew up with.
So and I saw, you know, you've appeared in public with full-size Smurfs at a children's hospital. At the children's mm-hmm. hospital, do they care more about the Smurf or you?
Smurf, definitely.
Yeah, no offense to you, Joe, but come on.
No, every once in a while I get, hey, you're Pee-wee's best friend. I go, yeah. Where's Pee-wee? Not that we're not happy to see you, but is Pee-wee coming? And I'm like, no, Pee-wee's not coming. which is progress.
Yeah.
Because I used to go to, I'm on the board of trustees at Children's Hospital
right.
Pittsburgh, and for years I've gone to that hospital, and the kids are like, who are you? And I'm like, I play a werewolf on a TV show. You're not in Twilight. And then mom would interject and say, no, he's on Mommy's Werewolf Show.
Oh, <God. laughs> That's a long conversation after you leave.
Yeah.
So is this has to be a no-brainer, I would think, when this comes around. It's completely. Relatively easy work. You get to be a part of something that you grew up with.
Yeah.
These guys obviously know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's a win all around.
And it adds to the action figure collection.
Most importantly, which is why you got into
talking. Speaking about ego, that's why we're all in it.
Yeah, we need to see your home with your giant busts of Joe's head in different guises.
Yeah, my wife is thrilled at all the memorabilia I drag home from shoots.
Is there a giant hefty? I mean, how big can a hefty toy be?
Jeez. Well, I mean, there's a person inside that hefty suit. So, I mean, theoretically, I could get...
Right.
A hefty suit. But,
for a special occasion back home.
Nah, but Smurfs are tiny. So, I mean, even when they say three apples high.
Right.
It's like, that's
not that
much.
That's
a little creepy.
Yeah.
But in the movie, did you notice the I don't know if it's an homage or the, I guess, the acknowledgement of that or the Easter egg for the old Smurf fans of three apples high?
I don't know if I did.
When Papa pulls the sheets back and there's.
Yes, that's a great. I legitimately laughed.
Three apples.
Not because of the inside joke, but now a whole other level works.
Three apples high. There's three apples.
Perfection.
Yeah.
I should also mention, I'm excited. This seemed inevitable that you were going to work with another one of my favorite human beings, Mr. Dwayne Johnson.
Yes, the people's champion.
I mean, that guy can do no wrong.
Yeah.
This was destined to happen. And Rampage, of all things.
Once again, another video game I grew up with.
Insane.
Yeah.
So what, and we know, I think Malin's Ackerman's also going to be involved with
you. Is she in now?
That's the
yeah.
word on the street,
okay.
according to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just reporting things. So who do you play? Can you say much about where you fit into this?
Well, I hunt monsters. I'll just tease this. I could probably say this. My section, or at least my character's story is, and I had to talk with the director, Brad Peyton, about this. It's going to be modeled after Predator, Dutch and Predator.
Sold.
Run with that. Yeah. So anyone who is a fan of Predator, another great Arnold movie.
Yes.
I mean, maybe the greatest Arnold quotes collection.
Yes. Per, yes.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Get to the chopper.
Stick around. You set us up. You drop us in the middle of a meat grinder. That'll happen to you. Used to be someone I could trust. I woke up, Dutch. Why don't you?
All else
you
fails.
You son of a bitch.
Your one-man Arnold show.
What's the matter? CIA got you pushing too many pencils? All right. What's with this fucking Thai business?
I have nowhere to go. Keep going.
Anyway, yeah.
What is your favorite Arnold movie of all time?
Their shit makes Cambodia look like Kansas.
Is that Jesse?
Jesse the Body, yeah.
So, okay, with all these like amazing franchises of our youth, like being like revitalized, there's another Predator movie being made by Shane
Black.
Pee
Wee Herman.
Come on. So you've gotten in on a bunch of them already, but like, do you seek them out? Do you, when if there's like a Predator or a Star Wars movie every year, do you say, Team Manganiello, go after it? Tell them I'm available?
Somewhat, yeah. I mean, the big one that I want to make is Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, I heard this. You were a big D&D guy.
Big. Still am.
And they've never cracked it. They've never
been able to figure it out. And last year, with a playwright that I went to Carnegie Mellon with, we actually made a draft of a film. And now we're, you know, talking to all the right parties. And actually, I had a two-day creative summit with the Wizards of the Coast, who actually are the creators. They're actually what TSR was. TSR, which created Dungeons & Dragons. They now run the show, and they've been the creative force behind it since the 80s. 80s? At least 25, you know, years.
Got it.
So.
Yeah.
And had a two-day creative summit with them, tested out some of the new products, and we had a two-day summit about where the movie could go or TV series, products, like, I mean, synergy, like the whole...
It does feel like this, like in this like time of cinematic universes and giant scale worlds, like this is an unexploited in a good way. Like there's so much there.
It's where there are so... All the video games you play came out of D&D. And most of the filmmakers now that are working that are from our generation grew up playing it.
Yeah.
That's how they started directing and producing. And, you know, my wife says, you know, well, what is it? You know, what is that? And you know, what's this game? And I said, well, I said, you like Lord of the Rings, right? You've seen them. They're amazing movies, right? She goes, yeah. I go, well, that's Dungeons and Dragons. I go, that show we watch every Sunday that's like our favorite show in the world, Game of Thrones, it's Dungeons and Dragons.
Totally.
It would not exist without – Dungeons and Dragons wouldn't exist without The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. But the films, the culture, the video games, it's all – because of this.
So what's the key, you think, you know, without revealing your entire plan or whatever idea for this, but what is the key to getting this right? I mean, Warcraft kind of tried this kind of same kind of thing and it didn't quite work for whatever reason. They had a great filmmaker behind it and it's tough. So what's your recommendation? What's your goal for a D&D universe film TV series?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a spectacle. There's dragons breathing fire and lightning and flying. I mean, that's the biggest draw in Game of Thrones.
Sure.
Other than, I mean, I'm sure there's probably people that would argue that Khaleesi naked is probably their big draw. But other than
something for everybody.
Dragons, you know, and seeing these creatures. But I think, like we were talking about before, what makes a great fantasy or superhero movie is the human aspect. It's got to be about something. And I think that's really what we root for those characters in Game of Thrones. And, you know, Fellowship of the Ring was about friendship. And this undying love for your friends and doing anything for your friends. And I think that's something that people can identify with.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Aragorn love story, it's something that people can identify with. This forbidden love and being separated from each other. And so I think when a movie is about something, human.
It sounds so simple, but people are not. Sometimes people skip over that.
It's tough, yeah. So when it's about something human and real emotionally, People are going to want to go see it.
Yeah.
And then if you get some dragons breathing fire and
all the better.
I mean, hey, so,
again,
I'm in.
A win for everyone.
Yeah.
So would you want to play a part in this? Or
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd want to play a part in it. And I also just, I want to work behind the scenes on it as well.
Yeah. So cast yourself. What are you? Are you a mage level 7? What am I dealing with here? What's sitting in front
have
of
you
me?
Ever, did you ever play?
A little bit. I can't pretend to be an expert. I'm no Vin Diesel sitting in front of you. You know he's legit.
Yeah, sure. The Nerdist did a special called D and Diesel.
Yeah, totally. I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
With the like world renowned, like the Phil Jackson of Dungeon Masters, this guy named Matthew Mercer. I actually just filmed a similar
Nice.
Like in that series, they just filmed one with me that's actually going to drop on the next day or two.
Oh, cool. I'll check
Nerdist.
It out.
So you have to check it out. Yeah.
So anything you can hint about what kind of role you'd want to play?
Not right now, because we're still, you know, we're developing and I'm still, you know, talking to all the involved parties about what can happen, where it can go. I have very, you know, strong ideas that that are backed up by the Wizards of the Coast. They agree. We are all in agreement as to where this thing needs to go and what it should look like and what it should be. So it's just a matter of someone exacting, I think, the plan that they really want to go with.
And so is Rampage up next? Are you shooting that next?
Rampage is up next. Yeah, that'll be in a few weeks I'll start. Fly out and start.
Have you spent much time with DJ yet?
I've never met him.
What?
But we run in the same circles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've both done a lot of, you know, muscle fitness covers and we're in the bodybuilding community and everybody kind of knows each other in that community, but we've never met. And I also I love wrestling and I've hosted wrestling and you know, and I've never, we've never crossed paths. So
do you go to his Iron Paradise? Does he visit yours? What happens? Is there, you meet in the middle?
We're going to find out. We're about to find out. Let me tell you something, brother. It's about to go down. The mega powers explode.
I always loved I don't know, I'm hesitating whether to ask you to tell it again, but coming full circle in the pronunciation of your name, the story you told of Hulk Hogan introducing you.
Yeah, at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, I hosted Monday Night Raw with Arnold. And, you know, we were going over our sketch backstage, and Hulk Hogan just could not get my name right.
One more time, brother. Tell me.
Manganiello,
got it.
No, dude, wait. And this went on and on and on. And finally we were backstage getting ready to go out, and he's got the boa and the glasses and the do-rag on, and he's like, all right, brother, one more time, give it to me. And I'm like, we're about to walk out there. I'm like, Manganiello. He's like, Manganiello, got it. And they blow the smoke and the Hogan music comes on. I am a real American. He comes down, high five, and everybody goes into the ring. And he's like, I want to bring out two of my good friends here to promote their new movie, Sabotage. My good friend Arnold Schwarzenegger and my buddy Joe Manganiello. Come on, man. So we went through our whole bit, and I was like fuming and like, ah, it wasn't even close, you know. And then we get backstage, and I was like, I was still like just staring at my shoes, like, come on now, like, my big moment. I've been made it my whole life to host wrestling, and this is what happens. And so we're doing this post-fight interview, and Hogan grabs the microphone.
He goes, let me tell you something. I got to clear something up, brother. It doesn't matter what I call him from now on, because from now on, brother, he's known as Joe Mania. And what you going to do when the Terminator and Joe Mania climb on the Hulkster's back, brother?
I was like, okay, you know what? You're forgiven. Because now whenever I'm around wrestlers, they're like, what's up, Joe Mania?
There you go.
Yeah, so I've got my wrestling name.
Okay, for what it's worth, Manganiello. It's not that hard, people.
Yeah, man. And we're going to put that video out again.
One more time for posterity.
Yeah.
Or Joe Mania. Just don't butcher it. Show the man some goddamn respect.
God damn it.
He's done so much for us.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, respect. Yeah. Show the man some respect.
It's been wonderful to finally invite my muse, my friend, Mr. Joe Manganiello here.
I wear many hats.
You do. I will always come up with silly ideas for you because I think you're so talented at so many – literally, you can do anything. So I will always exploit that.
The one we never got to do is the dick sketch.
That's right.
Which was hilarious.
The script is still on my computer. Maybe I'll put that out too.
So funny. Okay, yeah.
Don't worry. I'll come up with something else that will – ruin your career.
You haven't been able to ruin it yet,
no.
Josh.
Damn it, you're too strong for me. Smurfs, The Lost Village. For a lighter side of Joe, take the family, take the kids. It's super sweet, and it honors, you know, a show we all grew up with. It's great.
Yeah, it's great. Does a great job of doing that.
Good to see you, man.
Thanks, man. Great seeing you.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
This episode of Happy, Sad, Confused was produced by Michael Catano, James T. Green, Mukta Mohan, and Kasia Mihailovich for the MTV Podcast Network, with additional engineering by Little Everywhere. You can subscribe to this and all of our other shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you find your favorite podcasts.
With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool.
Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.